This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold 'em. So lay your cards down, 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 down. So park your Lexus and throw your keys up. You come close, some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a bitch, come take it to the floor now. Woo! There's a tornado.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Or welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media's special DNC coverage live from downtown Chicago. It is my honor and privilege to welcome D.C. Metro Police Officer Daniel Hodges. Excuse me. Welcome, Daniel. I really appreciate you making time.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it truly is a humbling privilege. You were there on January 6th, Daniel. You've testified before the January 6th committee. You also testified in court against three J6 defendants. So you've told your story a number of times.
I have, yes.
But as you and I were talking about just before we came on air, it's so important for people to hear it.
It is, especially since there's unfortunately so many people out there who's still trying to lie about what happened that day and whitewashing the violence and the stakes. So I feel it's important for me to make sure that the truth gets heard and that the people who need to hear it, hear it.
If you will, Daniel, share with us what happened. You were not actually there for very long before the crowd really had gotten out of control and you found yourself in quite a dangerous position.
Correct. So, yeah, I'm here today at the DNC in my personal capacity and not representing the department or my employer because I want people to know about what happened. And what happened was I was there on January 6th. I think I started around 7 in the morning. And I was initially assigned to Constitution Avenue, which is a street just outside of the Ellipse where Donald Trump's rally was being held. And when the rally ended, everyone filed out of the Ellipse and went down towards the Capitol. And as more and more people arrived at the Capitol, I could hear on my radio the commander there, who was in charge of the defense, just getting more and more agitated, more and more afraid. You could hear, you know, the anxiety and fear in his voice. And until eventually he called us and my CDU or civil disturbance unit to the Capitol to support the defense there. So once we got that call, we went back to our transports, got on our riot gear, and made our way towards the Capitol grounds. Once we were there, we got out on foot, and there was already a huge crowd encircling the building, so we had to fight our way through the crowd to the West Terrace itself. Fighting our way through the crowd, they at first they just started name-calling, called us oathbreakers, traitors, stormtroopers, but as we got closer and the crowd became more dense, they became more aggressive until they started attacking us. And they threw things at us, punched, kick, pushing. Someone tried to steal my baton, and we went to the ground wrestling for control over it until he kicked me in the chest, and I went to the ground on all fours, surrounded. Thankfully, my colleagues backed me up. I was able to get back up on my feet, and we fought our way to the West Terrace itself, where there was already a police line being held against thousands and thousands of people. On the West Terrace, we held the line there for as long as we could, until eventually they broke through. They were just completely overwhelmed us with numbers. And then the West Terrace devolved into a series of pitched battles in between individuals and small groups. There was a group of a couple, the insurrectionists, who pushed me back from the line into about a waist-high wall and held me there while another person reached up under my mask and tried to gouge out my eye with his thumb. Thankfully, I was able to shake him off before any permanent damage was done, and we fell back to the building itself, where we regrouped, and I put on my gas mask, found my way to the area that's known today as the tunnel, which is the hallway in between the Upper West Terrace and the room known as the Crypt in the Capitol building. So we mounted a defense there, and it was just virtually unlimited number of insurrectionists versus a couple dozen police officers. And we just held the line there as long as we could. Eventually, I've made my way to the front of the line in the tunnel. And I fought them there. I used the building, the frame of a door, to bolster my strength and just sort of push off against the crowd. But unfortunately, momentum had shifted to the point where I was pinned against the doorframe. My arms were pinned to my side. I couldn't muster any defense on my own behalf. So I was effectively defenseless. There were those at the front of the assault who took advantage of my state. I was being crushed against the doorframe by a group who was synchronizing their movements to more effectively launch an attack. Someone reached up and grabbed my gas mask, essentially punching me in the face several times with it, and then ripped it off my head. He stole my riot baton and beat me in the head with it. And at that point, you know, I thought that could be it, that I could die there because there was no, everyone else was occupied. I had no way to defend myself. The only thing I could do was call for help, so that's what I did. And thankfully, other officers heard my call for help. They were able to get me out of there. And I fell back to the crypt where I took a few minutes to myself, got myself back together, and went back out there because the fight wasn't over yet. The stakes were still high. We had to still repel this invading force. So I went back to the, I took another, a different stairway to the Upper West Terrace and held the line out there until, thankfully, reinforcements started to arrive from outside agencies. And I fell back to the crypt again, where I waited for the rest of my colleagues who joined me from my platoon. And we stayed there essentially for the rest of the night while reinforcements kept arriving and taking care of the crowd until eventually we were allowed to leave and go back into the city where we had to wait again. Those who needed immediate medical treatment went to hospitals where, and the rest of us went to the city center because even though the Capitol grounds had been cleared from these insurrectionists, they were still in the city.
Yes.
So we had to wait around for an hour or two until we got the all clear to go home. I think I got home around 1 or 2 in the morning. So it was, you know, a 19, 20 hour day, something like that.
I can't, it defies human imagination. I mean, what you're describing is basically war. And the fact that these were our own citizens and that we should have a common purpose to always see to the peaceful transition of power is just the cognitive dissonance. Even sitting here next to you, Daniel, and listening to you talk about it is overwhelming to me. And I didn't go through any of this physical experience. By your recounting, at least 3 times you thought you may very well lose your life that day.
Yeah, yeah, it was very real. The danger was extreme. There's intense violence, and I'm grateful I made it out intact.
As am I. You continue to serve with DC Metro.
I do, yes.
Did you consider at any point stepping back from being a law enforcement officer because of what happened that day?
No, no. I don't know what else I would do, honestly. I'm happy where I'm at. And that's what happened on January 6th is obviously unique. I've policed many, many First Amendment assemblies and riots before, mm-hmm. and nothing like that has ever happened, and I'm hoping will never happen again. So I don't let that define the career for me.
Yeah, I will say, very personally, on my own behalf, you're an American hero, and I thank you for everything that you did that day and for your bravery and your courage in speaking out, because I know that may not be universally well-received by all of your law enforcement colleagues. I'm not speaking specifically about DC Metro, but just writ large. So the continuing courage and bravery to talk about this, I think, is truly extraordinary and deserves our thanks and praise. I appreciate your commitment to the truth and to democracy, right? You would have done the same had it been a Republican president that should have been taking over power and control. This wasn't about partisanship.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's what I always tell people is, you know, if, you know, hypothetically it was Hillary Clinton that won in 2016 and then she was conspiring to withhold power in 2020 after losing an election, I would have done the exact same thing and I'd be saying the exact same thing I'm saying now. It's not about the politics of it. It's about the republic and preserving democracy in our country.
If a person was sitting next to you right now, Officer Hodges, that was asserting that these were Antifa protesters and not there for Donald Trump, or a person that was denying that this was as violent and life-threatening and dangerous as it actually was, what would you say to that person?
Well, I'm sort of unique in that I'm one of the few law enforcement officers in the country who have actually dealt with, I guess, what they would consider Antifa, because I was still a police officer in 2020 when the Black Lives Matter protests and riots were taking place. Mm-hmm. You know, I've faced them as well. And the people who attacked us on January 6th were not Antifa, whatever you imagine them to be. When we dealt with the violent groups in 2020, it was incredibly different in that violence for them was the goal. Whereas on January 6th, the violence had a purpose behind it. They wanted to prevent the peaceful transfer of power. In 2020, the violent groups were more about anarchy and just violence.
Disruption,
violence,
yeah. Right?
And then in 2020, when we used defensive tactics, they were effective. There was more the violent elements of those crowds were engaged in more hit-and-run tactics. Whereas on January 6th, there was very much a
sustained,
forward.
Yes.
They would get in that building at all costs.
Did you perceive on January 6th some level of coordination?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No question.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying every one of the thousands and thousands were on the same page, but there were absolutely groups who had planned out what they were going to do.
I have a follow-up question to that. Officer Hodges, what do you say to people who were there at the protests who maybe joined the crowd but didn't actually strike an officer? In other words, that were part or on the periphery of the violence and sort of disclaim responsibility.
Everyone, the most effective weapon used that day, and there were many weapons used that day, was the crowd itself. Every single member in the crowd contributed to the defense of the violent and made it more difficult for us to do our jobs because they would... The people who were violent would make an attack and then sort of fall back into the crowd itself where we couldn't effectively engage them without engaging everyone else. Mm. So everyone who was there, not only, you know, even if they were just trespassing, they were breaking the law and they were providing cover for those who were being violent and attempting to stop the transfer of power. So I don't buy into this innocence thing.
A moral and practical responsibility. My deepest personal thanks to you, Officer Hodges. Very special guest, officer from the D.C. Metro Police, Daniel Hodges, who was there on January 6th. My thanks to you, sir. You're an American hero.
Thank you very much.
I'm Maggie Dawn, folks. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh. We're going to light it up because it deserves to get lit up here at Civic Media's special coverage of the DNC from downtown Chicago.